Morning again. You know, up until yesterday, even yesterday, I wasn't sure how to begin this. Throughout my life, I've pondered life and all its mysteries, but never taken pen to paper to record my thoughts. It's a daunting challenge and task to be asked what you believe in, especially considering when you're asked to share those beliefs with a group, even though those you know and trust, maybe even more so because you don't trust them. And adding to the intimidation factor, at least for myself, is a consideration that the summation of your experience and musings amount to a philosophical zero. But as with any mathematical equation, the sum is zero, that doesn't mean the problem is any less difficult or interesting to solve. Now, to give this speech a little structure, I have decided to share with you today my story, where I've been and what I've learned along the way. It doesn't necessarily have a central theme, and it will likely take an occasional jump somewhere unexpected. This is done intentionally, for how my brain and train of thought operate, often jumping track and plunking me down somewhere seemingly random. Thus, I hope to be able to share with you more than just what I believe, but how I think, and why I believe the way I do. But there are caveats. First, this is not a complete list of my belief, and everything I tell you is subject to change, which is really the point of all this. As my father taught me, the only constant in life is change. There are no warranties or guarantees attached. But as Unitarian Universalist, that shouldn't come as any great shock to you. Second, and really, it's the same point, is that I'm probably wrong about everything. But as you'll see, that's okay. I was raised in rural northern Minnesota, in a home with a Catholic father and a Lutheran mother. Their plan was to raise one child as a Catholic, you see where I'm going with this, the other as a Lutheran. This didn't work out so well in practice, as it turns out. Big shock. My parents were divorced, and after years of attending Mass, I began attending Lutheran services on a regular basis. Now, for anyone who knows a little about the history of the Lutheran Church, you'll understand why this was a confusing period for me. It wasn't that it seemed Lutherans were out to bash Catholics at every turn, but the points in faith that led Martin Luther to nail his 95 Theses to the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church remained well steeped in regular service and in Sunday school. I began having doubts about everything I had learned and was learning. But, being told to have faith, I kept pressing on with the idea that perhaps I was being tested, and then eventually I'd be shown the light. In the summer of 1990, I moved out here to Beaverton with my mother, and continued attending the Lutheran Church, albeit grudgingly. I found that my doubts persisted, and I didn't have anyone to really discuss them with. I was secretly grateful on those weekends that we opted to go to the coast or to the eastern desert instead of going to church. In those places, I discovered a longing for exploration and learned that the most abundant rewards in finding answers to the questions were simply more questions. Now fast forward to the spring of 1994. I'm deep into my freshman year of college and everything that goes along with that, and I have finally committed myself, to the honest realization that I don't truly have any beliefs. But neither do I have any disbeliefs. To my young and seemingly logical mind, it was as much of a leap of faith to label myself as an atheist as it was to profess belief in any one religious faith. Here began my great journey in religious self-study. I may not believe or disbelieve, but damn it, I was going to find some kind of answer. I began, as I imagine most people do, concentrating on what I already knew. In my case, with a typical Judeo-Christian base, and then making ever-widening circles, moving from Protestant-based belief to Far Eastern ideologies and philosophies, to animist theologies. I began reading books such as Werner Keller's The Bible as History, which gave insight into historical events that shaped the stories that would become largely what we know today as the Old Testament. I also began reading existential mainstays such as Albert Camus' Exile in the Kingdom. After college, I embarked on a different kind of adventure, taking on the toughest job you'll ever love. I left for Zambia in 1999, ready to train as a water and sanitation hygiene education, or as its acronym is pronounced, WASHA, volunteer with the Peace Corps. Now looking back, I realize this is where my true awakening, if you will, occurred. It wasn't that I was exposed to yet more concepts of faith, though I was, and it wasn't solely the exposure to a broader spectrum of culture, because much of what I witnessed was reflected in all of human nature. Here, I saw people living a comparatively harsh life, but even as such, there were the constructs of economic status and relative wealth. There were those who we define as conservatives or liberals. And much of what any of you could observe about American or Western culture and people could be found expressed here as well, though perhaps wearing a different cloak that had been shaped and colored by its own evolution. Here, I was exposed to other kinds of writings, such as Travels by Marco Polo, what one reviewer cited as an expose of the exotic customs of India, Africa, China, and the Mongol Empire, to name a few. I read Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, that blasted concepts of racial superiority out of the water and sealed my own convictions with common sense research and evidence. Through what I read, and from my own observations, I noted how much more we all have in common than what our differences were. That's not to say that there aren't differences, but rather than picking fights over who's right and wrong, I recognize those differences should be a source for mutual inspiration, for learning, and for celebration. By walking the proverbial mile in someone else's shoes multiple times, I discovered that mine didn't always fit so well. I returned from the Peace Corps with this concept ever present on my mind. It shaped a lot of who I was then, and still who I am now. It was certainly present when I was having a friendly debate with a Christian roommate shortly after I returned. I won't here burden you with the details of the debate because it was the epiphany that stemmed from it which was important, and that what I remember. Through our discussion, I first came to terms with the realization that there's absolutely nothing I can know for certain. In fact, it became a sort of tagline for my life and even the newsletter description of this talk. The only thing I know for sure is that I know nothing for sure. Wow. Mind officially blown. If I couldn't know anything with certainty, then everything I had learned until that point was up for debate. Now what to do? Now where to go? Did it even matter? I didn't know, but I still wanted to try to find out. More than just find out, I wanted to see if areas that I had instinctively avoided, such as the political right, organized religion, or anything I considered status quo, might offer a different insight. I wanted to push myself outside of my normal comfort zone. So, I did what any normal person in their right mind would do. I joined the Navy. Now, the Navy presented itself as a multifaceted solution for me. It gave me the means to continue exploring the world through travel. It gave me a steady income and benefits. And exposed me to a culture unlike anything I had experienced before in the first hand. As a side note that I didn't write down here, it also brought me to my family. By signing that contract, I was also obligating myself to stick with something for better or worse, which was a concept completely alien to me. And what a wake-up call it was. I found my ideals and my ways of thinking to be more often than not in direct opposition to the mindset of a typical service member. Not only was it in opposition, but it was often challenged. Sometimes in a personal or informal way, at other times in a formal setting, where I was a subject to the edict of a direct order. Now, rather than seeking out like-minded folk, I was living in the center of a place where I was the outsider. But this had its benefit in the end. Through this lifestyle, I soon discovered that even the people I thought to be so morally opposite of myself weren't really very different from me at all. Just as I had discovered in Zambia, we had more in common than indifference. They were subject to wants and desires just as I was. They wanted good things for other people as well. They simply walked different paths and found their own conclusions as to what was true or how to go about getting something that we might agree was for the greater good. Their perspectives offered insight into this common factor, motive. Take, for instance, the topic of homelessness, where my standpoint at the time said, these people are down on their luck and need a hand to get back up. I should help them out right now with a couple of bucks. A more conservative colleague might say, these people are down on their luck and need a hand to get back up. I should give them the phone number to this place that can help him or her get a job so he or she can contribute to society. Is one standpoint more right than the other? Only by hearing the other points of view did I discover that both are wrong. Or, perhaps more accurately, both are incomplete. My exposure modified my mindset to one that says, these people are down on their luck, at least from my perspective, and might need a hand to get back up. But they also might be right where they want to be. All I can do is ask. And if they tell me, then I can help them out right now with a good meal or a cup of coffee to warm them up. And I can give them the number of that shelter or service that can help them out in whatever way they need help, but only if they want it. And the most important part of this shift in mindset, realizing that they were the only people that can answer that particular question. So here I am now, to use what might be a bit trite and overused Grateful Dead verse, what a long, strange trip it's been. But it's begged the question, what's left behind after all your philosophical, spiritual, or religious belief is eroded from your life? From an outside perspective, it might seem like a bleak and dreary outlook on existence. But in fact, it's quite the opposite. It keeps the door open on possibility for what is yet to be seen and discovered. And more importantly, it leaves me free to act on the things that are right here in front of me, evident in my everyday life. At the heart of this lies my family. I'm free from the burden of telling my children that there are finite and absolutes in the world. It frees me to be honest with them and answer their questions with, I don't know if that's the case. Even further, it allows me to say to them, I don't know, but why don't we look it up together? In this way, I'm showing them that it's okay to not have all the answers, because so often in life, we're deluding ourselves or we don't even realize that the things that we believe, because so often in life, we're deluding ourselves into believing that we do indeed have all the answers. Or that all the answers are just out there, waiting to impart their enlightenment upon us. Outside of my family, though not completely separate from it, I'm also able to see that I'm part of something much larger than just myself. Just as an ever-increasing body of evidence tells us that the universe is much, much more than the sum of its parts and is actually interconnected in mysterious and beautiful ways, I'm able to see that I'm part of a global network. And this network is more than a network of people. It's the connections of all species, of all things. Though I may not be able to clearly see what the far-reaching ramifications are. I know my everyday actions impact much more than just myself or my household. All because a little bug went ka-choo. Built upon both of these is maybe the most profound and liberating part of my personal theology, at least as it relates to the big question of what happens to us after we pass out of this life. I've realized that the truth is it doesn't even matter. Whether who we are continues on in some fashion, be it through reincarnation, moving into a place like heaven, whatever your belief, might be, or we simply cease to exist and the stuff of our bodies returns to the earth and eventually to the stars, all we have is right now. In that way, we truly are all living an eternal life. So, in this eternal life, in this now, if I had to present just a shorthand list of my beliefs, it might look something like this. I believe in the unknown. I believe that it's really okay to not know. That I have made many mistakes, and that I will continue to make more. That the imperfections in our lives are what actually make life perfect. That my dad was right, but don't let him know I said that. That the only constant in life is change. That my actions have both immediate and personal and long-term and far-reaching impact on just about everything. And that we're more closely connected than we can ever really know. And because of all that, this is where it gets a little more lighthearted. I believe in taking positive action in both big and little ways. I believe in play, because it's such a great way to share, especially with our children. And that time spent playing and sharing with your children is one of, if not the best, investment you can make in anything. And lastly, I believe in hugs. Lots and lots of hugs.